we really pride ourselves on having a wide array of products. And we want to be the people that can smash a deal through in 24 hours for you, clean residential first. And we want to be, you know, your one-stop shop for the tougher stuff as well. If you get the odd single family construction loan or want to send a commercial referral in.
Hi, and welcome to the Ask a Private Lender podcast. As always, I'm Lawrence from Mortgage Automator, joined by my partner, Joseph. And today we have Steve Cross coming all the way from Vancouver. For those of you who maybe don't know Steve, he's the Vice President of Mortgage Lending and Operations over at First Circle Financial, which, you know, from what I hear over and over and over again, is a fairly large company. They do a lot of business. So if you don't know about First Circle, it's great that you're listening because you're going to learn a lot about them. Steve, thanks for dropping by today. Really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
So let's start off with First Circle. My understanding is that your father started the company, right?
That's right.
So he's the owner of First Circle. When did he actually start the business? How long has First Circle been around for?
First Circle has been around for almost 30 years now. 1991 is when he started. He started with a management of a MIC that was... They didn't have growth objectives that met his growth objectives. So about 10 or 12 years ago, he actually started his own MIC, First Circle Mortgage Investment Corporation. So, you know, his career in our space has been 30 plus years. And in the MIC management space specifically with this new company here, it's been 10, 15 years. And now we've got $150 million under management between two different mortgage investment corps and, you know, about 300 or 400 files on the books right now.
So growing up, obviously, I mean, you look like a young guy. I don't know how old you are. I'm not going to ask, but you've been around the space for quite a while, it seems. Is it something that you always knew you were going to get into? You know, obviously you don't go to school for mortgages or right. mix, but being exposed to obviously what your father was doing at a young age, was it something you were always interested in and you knew you were going to walk down that path, or did it just happen?
You know what? He explained to me as a child every which way he could think of, and I just couldn't wrap my head around it. I knew he was in some sort of banking world and in the mortgage world, but I really didn't know what any of that meant. So I went to university in Thompson Rivers in 2009, and I just knew I liked numbers. I didn't want to I wanted to be in business, wasn't a big fan of the marketing, you know, didn't want to go into writing or anything like that. I knew I wanted to be in numbers, and the only thing I really knew was accounting, right? And so my dad's an accountant by trade. And I just figured, hey, you know, I'll take a stab at it and see how we go. So I took accounting 101. Everything seems okay. It's like, well, I guess it is what it is. And then I took the next accounting. I think it was managerial accounting is what it was called. And, you know, before I took that course, I was talking to the KPMGs and, you know, all the big companies to figure out what would be required to start my career as an accountant. And I took this next course and I just felt, this is not for me. You know, we were analyzing the manufacturing process and, you know, how much cost of oil is going into a certain chair and, you know, how many nuts you need to screw the chair together. And I just went, yeah, that's not for me. And so I was a little bit discouraged at that point. And then I realized that there was a second branch, finance. And so I delved into that. And that really was, you know, where I found my passion was in school. And so I went back for my first summer and I had a chat with my dad and I just said, Dad, you know, I think I want to be in finance. I don't think I want to be in accounting anymore. He says, oh, that's great. And I said, I'm not sure, you know, which facet I want to go into, the stock market and the volatility. It just seems too emotional to me. I'm not sure that's, you know, really where my interests lie, but I really love housing and real estate. That's really what I like. And he says, he looks at me and he goes, son, did you realize that I could finance real estate for a living? Wow, that sounds cool. Maybe I'll try that.
I was going to say, it sounds like you were buttering him up like, okay, yeah. Come along. But no, that's great. That's very interesting.
It's kind cool. of that happened to be the area that I wanted to go into. And he happened to be already in there. So, you know, most people, my friends and family just figured I, you know, followed in his footsteps. But, you know, I'd like to think that I kind of found my own unique way there.
Interesting. There's three people on the call, I think, who we're going to go into accounting, and we all just didn't make it. We didn't make it there. So it just shows that maybe it's not for everybody. That's for sure. Yeah. Starting with First Circle, I guess that's your first leap into this sort of a business. You know, was there something that you wish you knew before starting to work at First Circle? Maybe it could be anything, something, you know, just the type of business it was or the way it operated. Is there something that maybe would have prepared you a little bit more for what you were really going to get into had you known ahead of time?
That's a great question. You know what? I don't think there really is, because I started my first, I think it was actually a co-op term through the school here in my second year of university. And I started at reception. So, you know, it's not like I was placed in some management role. Like I really was, you know, answering calls at the front. That was my background. I was working in, you know, sales before in golf stores and hotels, and the customer service thing really came naturally to me. And so I was kind of put into that customer service role at the beginning, and then slowly ended up working my way through up into to management level. So
it's the best way.
So your father basically put you through the gauntlet.
Oh, for sure.
You know, it's funny. It's funny because people think like, oh, you're going to get a job with your father. He's going to put you in a great spot. It's kind of like, I feel like they treat you
worse,
but no, it's harder. They make it harder for you. They want you to learn everything.
Well, they want you to pay your dues, and they want you to know how hard it was for them. So they're going to then from the top enjoy watching you go through each one of these things, make mistakes, fall flat on your face. And then, you know, eventually they're hoping you're going to learn and figure it out. And in this case, obviously you've done an exceptional job.
Yeah.
And now it looks like you're running the shop. So it's awesome.
Yeah. And, you know, just to add another layer to that, my grandfather's on the board too, right? He's an accountant and he was in the business before my father. So yeah, I guess he kind of saw how that unfolded and, you know, applied some of the same stuff to me. So no, it was great.
So First Circle, let's talk about the types of loans that you do. You know, I hear that the 80% product is a big product for you guys. Yep. You're able to deploy a lot of capital into that product, but you know, is it all residential loans? Do you do commercial? Do you do construction? Like what does it look like? What are you guys doing?
So when I first started with the company, we were actually for the first maybe 15 years or so, my father ran it. It was 100% construction financing. That's all he did. And it was, you know, very cyclical. Back then, you know, they were 8-month terms. The loans were 200-300 grand because they're building, you know, 500 grand homes in Surrey, right? And they're just cookie cutter and you just smash them out and roll into the next one. And then we started to make some banking partnerships, or he made it started to make some banking partnerships. And we were looking into using leverage to further boost our yield. And what we found out is the banks really don't like construction whatsoever. And they have certain covenants that make you require residential and some commercial financing in order to qualify for your full leverage requirements, right? And so when I first came in, it was, I basically cut my teeth by trying to convince people that this construction lender now does residential stuff. So, you know, we were all connected with the guys who do construction, you know, the clients that just turn stuff over every year. And I had to go out into, you know, the main market and really push for the residential stuff. And here we are today and our portfolio is 75% residential right now. So
what's your personal view? Like, do you like doing the construction jobs? Do you like those types of loans, or do you find that like you do like it? Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Some lenders say like, it's a lot of oversight, right? You have to make sure that the builder knows what they're doing. Otherwise, you could find yourself in a problem.
I think the reality is like his father was doing strictly construction. So they understand that business.
Oh, for sure.
I think when you talk to a lot of the lenders in the industry today, they avoid it because it's more complicated. They have to learn a lot more about the property structure, when to give people money. Hopefully they don't give them money and they don't actually install the kitchen with that money. I think that when you do understand it, and then if something, God forbid, does go wrong, you can then send your own crew to fix the problem because you've managed your budget well. There is an exit for you.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people are scared of that.
Yeah, and that's certainly the main part that we're aware of. You know, we can look past income qualifications. We don't look at DDS, TDS on construction, but we're seeing a lot of fully income qualified stuff because the banks just don't want to touch it. Especially if you break ground before you apply for construction financing, you know, the bank won't do it. And so
I just had that problem.
Okay.
I had that problem. It wasn't fun. It wasn't fun. I bought a lot where the house was already torn down.
Yeah.
And like I had some cash and I started the construction. I had hired a builder and I went to the broker that helps me get mortgages. And he goes, what the hell are you thinking? Like, what you start, like, are you nuts? I'm like, I should have known better. He goes, you should have known better. Right. But so I had to, you know, pull a couple of strings, but yeah, once you start, it's a problem.
It's tough. Yeah. And it's a lot of us from our point of view, it's really, we don't like it either, but we'll look at it because it's hard to track where the money goes. Right. I mean, if you're paying trades directly and you come to me with a house at lockup, I guess I got to back up a bit here. You know, we look past traditional debt servicing ratios by making sure the clients have enough money to get the build done. And then through a reasonable marketing period, if it's spec, or they have the means to qualify for conventional takeout financing. Right. So we make sure that they have enough resources. If they're at lockup and they're paying trades directly, you know, we don't want to collect 400 grand worth of invoices and checks and bank statements confirming that the work in place has actually been paid for, right?
Yeah, no, I get it. And what about locations? Where are you? Vancouver? Are you across Canada? Like, where do you lend?
Well, we're BC only right now. Basically, all major lending centers in southwestern BC. So, Greater Vancouver, Fraser Valley, all across Vancouver Island from Victoria north right up to Courtney Comox and everything in between. And then we like the interior of BC as well. So Kamloops, Kelowna, Vernon, Penticton, and we'll go right down to a Soyuz. So pretty much nothing north of Kamloops, Kelowna, and nothing east of the interior.
Got it. And I assume the loan sizes are pretty hefty. Like you guys have a similar market to Toronto where like it looks like it's $500,000 at least a loan. Do you know what's your average loan size?
Yeah. So for, like I alluded to before, we have two funds, right? The big mix for average loan size, we're in that 550 to 600,000 range. And we've got anything from 100 grand up to, I think our largest loan right now is about 5.5 million. And that's a syndication across a couple properties. And then our other fund, it's more of a, like a private second mortgage fund, if you will. And we're looking at loans from, you know, 75 grand, ideally up to, I think we just funded one for about $1 million yesterday, second mortgage. And so that loan size average in that portfolio is about 150, maybe 175.
You have a preference over the big deals or the small deals? You like one or the other more?
Well, I mean, personally, from my point of view, it's more fun to be involved in the bigger deals, right?
Yeah.
But from a corporate structure point of view, depending on leverage, obviously we'd want to be 55% loan to value, you know, 500 grand cherry little loans. Yeah, I would say a good mix of everything would probably be healthy for us. We're at a size right now where more files, like, you know, the diversity that you're going to get, it's not really going to do much for you. So we're happy to look at some bigger stuff right now. Especially me, I'm starting to step away from the cookie cutter residential stuff. I'm getting more into the bigger construction, the smaller multifamily projects, the, you know, heritage restorations where they're doing strata conversions and some row houses, single family land development deals, larger strata warehouse stuff.
So, you want to do the exciting stuff?
Yeah, why not, right?
You don't want to do the simple $100,000 second mortgage on a single family residence.
Well, I think there's just less competition in those areas as well. If you can specialize in still doing the cookie cutter stuff, which obviously your fund will never say no to, there's not a lot of guys. You talk to a lot of people, they'll tend to shy away from all the stuff you're mentioning right now. So being an expert in that area, brokers will know, like, you know, First Circle is the company that can handle not just the typical loans, but all other types of loans as well. I think it's important to have that diversity. But again, you know, depending on, again, the size of the MIC that you have or the operation that you run, if you don't have the cash to diversify into these types of projects, you will have, unfortunately, too many eggs in one basket, which you also don't want.
We really pride ourselves on having a wide array of products. And, you know, we want to be the people that can smash a deal through in 24 hours for you, clean residential first. And we want to be, you know, your one-stop shop for the tougher stuff as well. If you get the odd single family construction loan or want to send a commercial referral in.
You said 24 hours. That's not a lot of time. That's quick.
We've invested a deal in, you know, from origination to being at the lawyers within 3 hours or 3.5 hours, I think it was. And that's thanks to you guys, of course, with the new mortgage automator system. We're able to get the deals in electronically and spit the commitment out right away. And then, you know, we get all the docs back and with the push of a few buttons, it's off to the lawyers, right? So we ended up funding that deal. I think we got it at noon We had full loan approval off to the lawyers by 3:30, I believe it was, and it was funded the next day at 10 a.m.
That's awesome.
It's amazing. And you know, that's just shit. Like, if you're a broker listening and you rush deals, you need guys like Steve. You need these guys like First Circle in your arsenal, because if it's Wednesday and you have to close by Friday, there are few people. A lot of people will say they can do it, and they're going to push it off till the Monday or the Tuesday, and you're ready like dealing with the loan. So what are you going to do? Pull it last minute? No, but there's few people who can actually do it. Call Steve, try them out. Yeah, they're the real deal. You got to have a guy like Steve in your arsenal for sure. I was going to ask you, every company has challenges, right? Not everything is always rosy. Things come up. What would you say right now, First Circle's biggest challenges, whether it's like deal flow, money, like whatever it might be, what do you guys struggle with? And how do you guys see yourself overcoming that struggle? Or if you have already overcome that struggle?
Great question. For sure, the biggest problem in our market right now, it's the exact opposite problem as it was 2 years ago or 3 years ago. There's so much liquidity in this market. Lenders are having a really tough time getting capital out. And we're in a very fortunate place where we decided not to grow at exponential rates. You know, we very easily could have, if we raised the capital, we would have got the mortgage money right back out the door. And we just said, you know, we'll take our 20% growth and just keep rolling, you know, as we are. And so we're at a leverage point that's really good for us. We're nicely drawn into our line of credit. We still have a lot of cash that we can get out, but we're not at a point where we're scrambling. And so I think we just set ourselves up to win in that category. And it's been really great for us. In terms of struggles right now, I would say having to push off of our old system, our Excel system. We've been running on it for so long. It's second nature to us. Speaking to Joe about this last night, actually. And, you know, it's just that push off from the old system. And you just have to trust the new one and just go with it. And the funny part is it's not that MA is not working properly for us. It's actually catching mistakes that we have in our old system. It's just a habit, right? Yeah. It's letting go. And we have processes and procedures in place, and we like to keep everything quite tight. You know, we're dealing with large transactions here, and we don't want a renewal fee to slip by or some insurance to go unnoticed that's expired or something like that, right? And so I would say just putting new policies and procedures in place to set us up in the future. It's soaking up a lot of our time, and we feel that it's worth it, but that would be our biggest challenge right now. And then again, being forced digitally at the same time.
Being a newer generation of lender, having that different thought process, and of course, having a lot of influence in what we've done here at Automator as well. Don't want that to go unnoticed. A lot of the ideas, things you see in Automator today are because of Steve Cross. He just has a different vision and outlook on how businesses should be run. And we commend you for all the input and support, Steve. Talking about the new world, digitization, it's kind of hit everybody pretty quickly. It's been kind of, you know, slow and steady. Everyone's doing things, you know, Excel, Word, apps come in via PDF. How would you say you guys, outside of obviously Automator, like how have you guys been preparing or for this new world with the Equifax rules, Filogix? Are you embracing everything? Do you think it's good for the industry, or do you think they move too quickly and it's going to create problems long-term?
And I could probably talk about this for days, but I guess I could start at the beginning. So, you know, they came into our space and they wanted bips on our deals, right? And we basically saw that as a threat. And we saw somebody, you know, if we're making 100 bips on a deal and they initially came in at, you know, 8 to 10 bips or whatever it was, we saw that threat of 8 to 10% of our bottom line, and we weren't okay with that. And then as we started to really understand why these changes were coming and how we could reposition ourselves to be more efficient, to be more secure, we started to realize that this was actually a great thing for the industry, and it's going to be a great thing for us as well. So it's really just, you know, repositioning costs and saving money in a different spot. So I think it's fantastic, great for the brokers. It's great for the end consumer. It's great for us. It keeps everything safe. And frankly, I think they need to button it up a little bit faster, because there's still some stuff floating around out there.
Yeah.
So I think that they're doing a great job, and they had to move probably a little bit quicker than they had planned. But I like the direction they're going. It's all good.
I think you actually hit it. I think the industry has never worried about consumer protection before. And I think there is something to be said about, you know, John Smith's credit bureau floating around to 10 different lenders. and five employees at each company looking at that credit bureau. That's 50 people looking at some guy's financial situation without his permission, just because some broker sent an email and let it float out into the internet. Plus with the co-brokering and the co-lending, it could be progressively worse. I agree with you. I think going where it's going, looking after the consumers. I also think, and Lori always says it, something about writing something on a napkin just seems very old school. I remember brokers would just send you an email like, here's an email, or here's literally, we'd meet with someone, they'd write it at lunch. Here's the details of this loan, go figure it out. I like the idea of being able to go online, digitally submit everything. It shows up, it makes everyone's life easy, and they in turn feel that they can get a response quicker. And the larger guys, even smaller guys, are now embracing the fact that they're able to actually have access to a larger pool of people because of the digital world that we've all come to know today. And yeah, it will actually weed out a lot of the stuff that I think has been harming the industry for quite some time.
Yep. I agree with you.
You guys have, you said 150 under management right now. I assume that's spread out over a significant amount of investors. You deal with some of the investors yourselves? Are you in charge of the investment side? Any, or is that a different area of the business?
So obviously my father's at the top. We've got two VPs in the lending side. There's myself and Jason, and we both do the underwriting and oversee the lending department. And then there's Anna, who is the VP of finance, and she handles all banking relations and investor relations.
You help the underwriting. Do people send you deals? Are there BDMs that they should send deals into? How do they submit deals to First Circle?
Yeah, if you want to call and chat about a deal, I'd always suggest calling our BDM, Kyle Williams. He's our go-to guy. He's our boots on the ground guy. He's, you know, presentations right now, Zoom calls is, you know, really where he is. And we're getting some print stuff ready, and we want to hit the ground running once everything starts to open back up. So we've got some new swag, we've got some new booklets and stuff, and you know, we're excited for everything to open back up, and we're ready to go.
I can't submit any deals because I'm not a broker, but I'll take the swag. So you can send some swag our way. I'm happy to rock that in the office. So don't forget about me. I love it.
I wear my Mark socks all the time.
Do you? I love it. If you need any more, you let us know. We'll send them over. We got a whole box full. So that's great. So brokers can send them over to your BDM. And do you work direct to consumer as well, or is it all through the broker channel?
We don't love to for a variety of reasons. There's so many options on the residential side that we just wouldn't feel like we could properly represent a borrower on a typical residential purchase. We want them to be properly advised. You know, our big thing is disclosure, transparency, ethics, you know, keeping your client's best interest in mind. And I don't see how we can follow any of those by working direct to consumer. It's not to be said that there's not something for that business model. There's some conversations that could be had around, you know, have you gone to a bank? Have you gone to a credit union? Then we're probably your next best option. But it's just not something that we feel comfortable with. So we have some guys, you know, we do get people calling us to borrow money directly. And if they have a very limited knowledge of our industry, we refer them out to a broker. It doesn't happen very often, but we do work direct with some builders and some more experienced, you know, developers or industry participants.
Just have everything buttoned up. They probably just know what's going on. You know, you ask them for stuff, they have it on hand. It's not creating an issue for the business. It's just,
It's also a different type of financing. These are repeat clients who've borrowed money from Steve before, who've built houses. They know the process. They know they're already not getting the bank financing. Whereas like Steve said, a residential purchase, the guy's got to explore his options. And so there's always that conflict of interest where are you doing the best for your client, or are you doing what's best for your business? And smart, get the broker to bring it back to you if that's the only option left.
Yeah. And you know, the broker channels are lifeblood. Those relationships mean more than anything to us, and we want to keep them happy. So, you know, that's our interests really lie in keeping the broker happy. And we like the brokers whose interests lie in keeping their clients happy. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good. Everyone has their own side to represent, and it makes sense.
At the time of renewal, maybe trying to take them out or something. And what I say to those guys is really, I don't care about this deal. And the brokers really go, why don't you care about this deal? And it's like, I want your next 10. I don't want this one. So if you're worried about this one, you know, I'm not going to steal one from you. I want the rest of your business. I want, you know, to develop the next 10 years with you.
So what do you do before maturity? Do you reach out to the brokers? How long before? What's the process like when a deal's about to expire?
Well, what we do is we charge very low renewal fees. And so we like to think that the brokers have CRM programs in the back end that can really tell them when it's coming up for renewal. And sure, the good brokers do. We issue renewal letters direct to clients on commercial spec stuff. We throw a bit of fees in there. You know, if they're trying to make money, we'll make money. That's our renewal policy. But if they're trying to put a roof over their head, it's, you know, $250 at current market rates. And we don't want to guide the client back to the broker, but we just hope that, you know, the good brokers have, you know, that diarize and that relationship with their borrowers. Sure.
And I think most at this point have some sort of a system. I mean, if you don't have a system as a broker, I mean, you're, I don't know, it's not, exactly. It's not a good way to run your business.
You know, we have a place in the market where we're a stepping stone, we're credit rehab sometimes, we're non-conforming down payment sometimes, we're non-conforming income for whatever reason. And generally speaking, they have a plan and they want to move that borrower to a B lender or a bank or an A lender.
For sure.
What have you. So a lot of the good brokers have these plans and have constant communication with their borrowers. And, you know, we're generally one, sometimes two, the odd time 3 year term, and then we're out.
Oh, you'll go three. Okay. That's good to know.
Yeah.
That's good to know. Yeah.
Wait, you mean like you're not going to lock up the client for 3 years on day one. You're saying year and then renew
year after year.
Renew.
Well, I mean, so for any spec stuff, we're just 1 year. We do everything open, interest-only payments, unless otherwise requested. We offer longer terms for owner-occupied properties. So we've done quite a few two-year terms. We've done a couple 18-month terms. We've done a couple three-year terms as well, actually.
What do you do about the fee? Do you like triple it? Like if it's a three-year term?
No.
Because like you don't. Wow.
And so,
that's a good deal.
It's a really cool dynamic that we're getting into. I mean, from the business side of things, it's, you know, it's work to renew a file, right? There's time involved in doing it. And if we're charging $250 for that renewal, for the paperwork, you're really not, you have an ability to adjust your rates and terms, I guess, but I'd rather forego that. And, you know, the best clients that you have, the best files on your books are the ones you don't remember. And so if you just keep paying for 3 years, I'll waive $250 to waive some, you know, time out of my agenda to get the file renewed.
Sure.
That's kind of the mindset we're leaning into now, where can they sure we wanted to renew construction files and throw a half point or quarter point on there, really looking at the size of our book and how big we can get it. So we're looking at it more from an administrator point of view than an originator point of view.
Completely makes sense. And I do agree with you that the best deals are the ones you don't remember. Right. Because it just means that they're paying and they're, you know, they're doing their thing. For the purpose of the podcast and me asking lenders questions, I always love to know the ones that you do actually remember. Right. So one of my favorite questions to ask is like, what is your most memorable deal that you've been involved in?
My most memorable deal.
You know, the one that you're out with your buddies, you've had a few drinks.
Yeah.
Maybe you bring it up because it's half funny, half sad. Yeah, you know, but it's still good because you got out of it.
I had one construction file. It was literally one of my first probably 10 files that I ever picked up, and it paid out in 2020. And the story there was they bought a lot, and it was just nightmare after nightmare with the permitting. So there was power lines running through the back of the lot, and they needed to do some blasting underneath the power lines. And I think it took them 2 years to do that. And so I had my approval in hand, just like sitting on my physical file at the time, waiting for them to break ground. And they just weren't doing it. Our first draw was at lockup. I think it took them 3.5 years to get there.
Oh God.
My gosh.
And then after that, it was, I think, a 3 or 4 year build to reach final occupancy.
My God.
That's a nightmare.
Insanity.
They kept their head above water, bless their hearts. But
you know what though? 7 years, the prices of real estate have gone through the roof. And I think that them sitting on this project for 7 years probably made them more money if they built it and sold it right away.
Well, I think they bought their land because it was a bit of a dog lot for like 800 grand in a very prestigious neighborhood. And before they broke ground, I think it was worth 1.5.
Oh my gosh. But they were making their payments every month, right? There was no issue with missed payments. And
no, obviously we weren't happy with the pace of construction. For construction, we don't take monthly payments. We accrue and deduct from the draws. So the net advance to the clients was obviously a little bit less than what we had anticipated, but it all worked out in the end. So
wait, when was the first draw then? So if they didn't do anything for
3 years,
very
long. Said.
So I had the file on my desk for 2.5 years, I think, before they broke ground. And then it was probably close to 3 years before we actually funded. Our first draw was at lockup.
Got it.
But then it was a 3 or 4 year journey from lockup to completion. Like their actual final, they had the home done for about a year and they just kept failing their occupancy just for little things. You know, they didn't know the intricacies of the zonings and the bylaws and all that kind of stuff. You know, it's a really good story. One commercial guy told me that don't cheap out on your trades. It's you're not going to save yourself any money.
Oh God, no.
Hire a good builder, hire a good contractor, hire good trades. They don't have to be top end, super expensive, but get good people in there. It'll save you money.
I'm building a house right now. I'm just going to write that down just to make sure that my guys are okay. No, my guys are good, but no, it's 100% true. I mean, you cannot cut corners. It just, you think you're saving money. You're not.
No,
you're not. You're going to get stuck somewhere along the way and you're going to pay for it. I won't bring up the story with my own, but
I was going to bring up that story, but yeah, we'll leave
you're
it
not
for another
save
day.
Money. You know, you think you're getting a deal somewhere.
Yeah.
And you end up paying more at the end of the day than if you would have gone.
Steve, then you realize you have the wrong roof installed.
Exactly.
Thank you, Joe. Thank
no
you
problem.
For that.
No problem.
No, listen, I think this is great. Just to summarize, First Circle out in Vancouver, they're all over BC. They do like almost every type of loan. So legitimately, they could be your first call on everything.
Pretty much everything.
They go up to 80. I think they have a make sense attitude. So it's not just like a black and white box. They're going to look at the deal. They're going to understand the deal. And they're going to give you a quick answer, which I think is the most important thing in the industry. You don't want to send a deal to someone who's going to sit on it for 4 days and not give you a response. So as you heard, they funded deals in a day. So you're going to get your answer very quickly. And I think more times than not, the answer will probably be yes, because they just do a lot of stuff. And $150 million on the books, they got a loan upwards of $6 million. So they can write the big check. If you have a good deal, they're not afraid to write those big loans, which is obviously good. They have a BDM you can reach out to. Again, what's his name, Steve? Sorry.
Kyle Williams.
There you go. So don't be shy.
Ask if you want to submit a deal though, and you can email mortgages@firstcircle.ca.
There it is. Any final words, anything you want to end with?
I guess I just want to thank you guys for A, having me on your podcast and B, running or being so receptive to my change requests in MA. You guys have just been terrific to work with. And, you know, the vision that you guys have for your company, it's really unparalleled to any of your competitors. And I just can't wait to see where you guys are going to be in the next few years.
Thank you, Steve.
Really appreciate the kind words. For everyone, thank you for tuning in. You can follow Mortgage Automator on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Instagram. We're Automator Group on Twitter. Go to askaprivatelender.com to check out all the latest podcast episodes. Steve, thank you very much. We really appreciate you stopping by today.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for tuning in to the Ask a Private Lender podcast. Go to askaprivatelender.com to check out the other episodes. Follow Mortgage Automator on Instagram, LinkedIn, and Facebook, and we're Automator Group on Twitter. And we'll see you in 2 weeks. Bye.